Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at jwright929. As always, you can listen to us on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio dial, you can still stream us live on the Odyssey app, free to download, free to listen. You can also catch us over on TuneIn and iHeartRadio. Also, check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Jeffrey. Happy real opening day.
Happy real opening day. Our two teams doing battle. I believe the Cardinals will be taking one of their probably 95-plus losses today. But playing the young guys. So that at least gives me something to watch.
I am excited to at least see J.J. Weatherholt. Very excited for him.
Everyone is very pumped up about that. Also, I think we might be able to watch games. I'll tell you more about that when we get into the list. My company is he is each and every Thursday, except when he's not covering the tournament. He, of course, writes about college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. You can follow him on the Everything app. At David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, happy opening day. A happy Sweet 16. It's a good sports day.
And that is where we are going to start because, Cobb, I realized this week, holy hell, we really need the games back. And we'll get into that here in just a moment. It appears LSU's going to do it. They are going to bring back Will Wade, and we will talk about that as well as some other college basketball coaching moves. We'll discuss that next with Cobb. We'll get into the list during the second hour. We did, of course, have Netflix's Major League Baseball debut. We found out that it's kind of a tough scene out there for some Major League hitters that might have been lying about their height. Didn't think they'd get caught in the way that they did, but tough scene. We'll also get into, as mentioned, the perhaps baseball maybe doing fans a solid. Maybe the commissioner of a sport actually trying to help out the fan. So I'll tell you about that and perhaps where you could watch Braves, Cardinals, and more. We officially solved the dilemma, Cobb. We were trying to figure out on Tuesday with Tim Murray how the NFL schedule was going to work because the Australia thing had everybody thrown off because the time zone changes. So we do know the commish is going to do it. He's going to open on a Wednesday.
Open on a Wednesday. So now the NFL has taken over. Wait, is Tuesday now the only day? Is that, Tuesday and Friday? Are those the only non-NFL days now?
Do you count the fact that it appears, so what we've been doing the last couple of years is open on Thursday, Friday. I think that's when we've been going to Brazil. Is the Friday of the opening week. So what we're doing this year is opening on a Wednesday, playing on Friday in Australia, but airing it live Thursday in America. So technically, I don't think we have an NFL game on that Friday, but we will have Black Friday games this year again.
So okay, yeah. So Wednesday and Tuesday. There's no NFL games on Tuesday, right? Ever.
What day is Christmas this year? I feel like Christmas might be Friday this year, because wasn't Christmas Thursday this year?
Yeah, you're right. It's Friday. Yeah, that's weird that you remember that. Like, I could never tell you, like, what day of the week Christmas was.
The only reason I remember that is from a sports watching thing, it's like, oh, Thanksgiving Friday, like, all of it was still the same Thursday. Like, I that's the only thing I remember. And then Christmas Day and New Year's Day are always going to be the same. And I just remember Thursdays being a day when we were watching football.
See, my, when I think about the days the NFL plays, I don't really think about it from like enjoying the NFL. I think about it from like ruining all the other sports because the NFL just kills everything else in terms of people who watch, people who want to read about other things. Like the NFL just takes it all over. And that's why I get annoyed with the NFL expanding into new days of the week, because it's one less night where you can get decent ratings on a college football game. We used to love Thursday night college football. It used to be great. You used to have good matchups. Now you really don't.
Now, nobody wants to play the game.
And it's kind of the same way with college basketball now. It's like with all these NFL games on different nights of the week, like college basketball is trying to schedule around the NFL. And it's just like, you just can't anymore because the NFL wants to play every night of the week.
So from memory, I think that means this year the only day we will not play football, yes, this year is a Tuesday. Because we'll obviously play, we're going to play on a Wednesday, we're going to play on a Thursday, we'll play on Black Friday, we'll have the Saturday games once the college season ends, we'll have Sunday and, of course, Monday. So, yeah, Tuesday this year, unless a game gets like, remember in COVID, I think, didn't we have a Tuesday, or was that a Monday afternoon? I felt like maybe we had a COVID issue where we played on a Tuesday, but
it won't be long. It won't be long.
I don't want this to come across as Tiger apology. I have wondered this because you're mentioning about college basketball and how it impacts scheduling. And to a certain degree, there's nothing they can do about it because it is the American Athletic Conference's TV deal with ESPN. And obviously, they're not going to get priority ranking. I don't think the Thursday-Sunday, like, that's when they mainly play their conference games. It's not exclusive, but that's, I think if you broke it down based on conference games this year, I think the Tigers would have played most of their conference games on Thursdays and Sundays. I don't think that helps attendance.
No, probably not. Sundays are an NFL day, right? Like, you just can't compete. You just can't do it.
Well, still the South, like, especially, like, it wasn't their fault. But the UAB game, remember when they did the stripe out and I told you, like, oh boy, like they should have canceled that.
Right.
They got put at 11 a.m. Central Time on Sunday against UAB in the South.
Yeah, unless you're going to that sunrise service, you know, it's going to be hard to get down to the Forum and park and get in there in time for a basketball game.
And it's kind of also tough to convince the wife, hey, I know we're like a 11:15 church crowd or a 9:30 church crowd. Let's go to that 8 a.m. so we can go watch that basketball team.
Oh, I mean, I'm already worried about, like, I'm playing in a golf scramble that might have Sunday morning tee times at the end of April. And I'm like, man, this is going to be tough. Like, is Sarah going to go to church without me and take the baby? Like, I don't know. Like, I got to, you know, that's going to be a tough one.
I was able to get away with, before Josephine, I could get away with the go play on Sunday, she go to church, and me not go to church. Post-Josephine, that ain't happening. It's well, not even, know, like, there hasn't been, like, a, we don't have, like, a set of rules in the house, but, like, that's one that, like, I just not really going to push that one.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, getting butts in seats at Memphis is a challenge already. Now, yeah, you throw in these weird start times. I mean, I guess in a sense, it gets you better TV slots because
it
ESPN's
is better,
like,
for your television exposure. I don't know if it's better for your in-fan experience.
Yeah, it's better to be on ESPN2 on a Sunday from a TV experience than it is to be on ESPN Plus on a Saturday.
Correct.
Because you actually get a good broadcast crew, more people are going to see it. But yeah, from an in-person experience and ticket sales perspective, not ideal.
And again, before anyone accuses me of being of a Tiger Glazer, like, that was truly something that crossed my mind. Like, because
do people accuse you of that? Does that happen? You get accused of being a Tiger Glazer?
I'm certainly what is considered a penny apologist. Even though all I said all along was, I don't think he's getting fired.
Right.
That's all I said. And I also do think, I think they made a prudent decision. I do believe, and I actually would say this for more schools than not, when you have a delicate coaching situation, whether it be a alum or someone famous or someone that is universally liked in general, you are better off giving them the chance to get it right and leaving no doubt if they don't get it right. Because then when the time comes to make the decision to move on, like, everyone, you know what I mean? Like, if you're in the, if you're the, you shouldn't have done this, you're going to be such a vocal minority that the masses are going to agree this was the right decision. And I think it's been helped by the fact that now we're in a situation where people are having to make better financial decisions with coaches because everybody's trying to pay the rosters. I think you're, I would rather at this stage in the game in general, I'd rather be 6 months too late than 3 months too early.
Fair enough. I mean, we're about to find out whether UNC made the right decision.
Well, you it's know, like, they- I think an interesting case study, and granted, he's not been there as long, but there's a there have been Kentucky coaches that have been fired after 2 years, right? Didn't Gillespie get fired after two?
I'll double check.
There was a case that you could say, this isn't working, this isn't good for either party, Kentucky should move on.
Yeah, Gillespie only got 2 years. Yeah, you were right.
Granted, he's an alum. Like, they want it to work. The team had injuries this year. There are contextual things that matter. But do you in your heart of hearts believe, like, Mark Pope's getting it done?
Well, no, and it's there. Yeah, he's just not as far down the line as Hubert Davis, but the similarity is there. And it's crazy because Hubert Davis had the things that, you mentioned. Yep. Like, he had an injury to his star player. He got fired. But what blew my mind is the fact that Hubert Davis's buyout was less than Penny Hardaway's. I mean, wrap your mind around that. You know, so in that sense, it probably made it easier for UNC to pull the trigger there. But it sort of blew my mind because after, what, 3 months of discussing this situation on a regular basis around Memphis, to see UNC pull the trigger that quickly under sort of similar circumstances. It's a former player, obviously Hubert Davis, not in the Mount Rushmore of great former Carolina players, but still one of their own. And then you have the situation where, you know, I mean, his best player was hurt, like, and he gets fired and had a shorter sample size and more success than Penny Hardaway. And I was like, well, dang, like, Carolina's got financial concerns. Like, they might have to fire Bill Belichick. So that one did, like, it surprised me in that sense because there were contextual similarities to Memphis, and Memphis made the other decision.
It surprised me until Sunday when Thamel was on game day. I mean, I will say, like, his Hubert Davis's post game on, did they play Thursday or Friday? That was Thursday, right? That was the first day.
Right.
Watching that, you knew, like, you could sense that was somebody that knew I couldn't lose that game. Like, that was when, and then you got then the tweet went out about the canceling of the radio show, and then Thamel on game day on Sunday was like, listen, they're sorting it out. He's not coaching next year. Like, he was that definitive. And so that was, yep, when I was like, but I mean, to your point, if you go back, what, 2 months ago, because when does Caleb get hurt?
I feel, yeah, like, it was February.
If I would have told you at that point, because the Tigers were reeling, if I would have said Hubert Davis is going to get fired and Penny Hardaway is going to keep his job, that would have been pretty surprising.
Absolutely, yes.
I do also wonder about this. Who's Kentucky basketball's biggest rival?
Louisville.
Okay. If Louisville were, because what, Louisville gets bounced on Sunday, right? They both They both won a game and got bounced. And while Pat Kelsey feels like he's gotten it back on track, it doesn't necessarily feel like Louisville's at, like, the Patino level when Patino's there. I do wonder how much of it with Kentucky is you're not quite as turned up to 11 as North Carolina is, because it feels like with North Carolina, they may not admit it out loud, but the fact that the Shire handoff is working, that seems to impact their decision-making a lot.
Oh, without a doubt. No doubt about it whatsoever. Like, that is, that's painful, right? Like, your point Dan, like if Louisville were on the in the midst of an Elite Eight run or a Final Four run right now, the angst around Kentucky would be even greater. Or maybe even vice versa. Like if Kentucky was doing it, like Louisville would be feeling pretty antsy, right? But I also think Kentucky and Louisville are pertinent to this conversation because you got to look and see, I mean, just the caliber of candidate that they had to go after, right? Like Kentucky fans were thinking, all right, we're going to get Brad Stevens. If not, we'll get Billy Donovan, you know, third choice Dan Hurley, absolute worst case scenario, you know, total disaster. We end up with Nate Oates, right? And that's what they were thinking going into that coaching search. I mean, and then who do they end up with? They end up with freaking
Mark Pope. Who's not right? He had a solid resume. Not the resume of, like, let's be real, if he didn't go to Kentucky, he wouldn't be the head coach. Like, that's, but to your other point, Cobb, don't forget that, the other aspect of it. Scott Drew flew to Lexington and did not take the job. Something that in that business, you only get on that plane when it's done.
So what happened there? That's a interesting question, you know?
My only thought is I can buy at the end of the day, his wife didn't want to go. And I'm not even saying that because, I'm not saying, like, Lexington stinks, Waco's better.
There's way more shiplap in Waco.
Well, I mean, I can just see where it's like, if you're his wife, let me get this straight. They're going to pay you every bit as much at Baylor, and if we have a disappointing season, it's okay. Weren't their kids
Lord knows they're having a disappointing season.
Weren't their kids also like high school? Like you could talk me into like family at that point. I'm not sure Scott Drew's wired for a Kentucky.
Right.
But I think he's a hyper competitive guy. Like I do think he's a good coach, but like that's a different deal.
Yeah, I hear you. My point in bringing all that up is just to say this, like maybe North Carolina gets Billy Donovan. He seems more apt to leave right now than he did when the Kentucky job was open a couple years ago. And if that's the route this goes, then like congratulations, North Carolina. You clearly made the right decision. Can Billy Donovan still coach in college basketball in this era?
Who knows?
I don't know, but it's worth finding out. Worth finding out. So like, good job. Like if you upgrade from Hubert Davis to Billy Donovan, like well done. But if you end up in the Kentucky Louisville situation where you're going to hire a coach who your fans have to Google search, then like I don't know that this was the right decision here. When you look at all the financial ramifications of parting with Hubert Davis and getting a new coach, and then oh yeah, we might have to fire Bill Belichick in a year from now, and like if you end up with a coach from the mid-major ranks that your fans don't know, like you can't tell me they're going to be galvanized to contribute to the NIL war chest, like. I don't buy that for a second. So, like, you have to go out and make it the right decision. So I actually think it was smart for LSU to, like, hang on to Matt McMahon. Like, unless you were going to get Will Wade, like, who were you going to get that was actually any better than Matt McMahon? Like, when basketball is your fifth most important sport, you know? Like, so just hang on to the guy you got until you can figure out if you can actually get the guy you want. North Carolina did not take that approach. So now it is very important that they land a good hire.
I had this half-baked idea the other day. I'll run it by you. I used to think let's use Ben McConnell right now as the example because he's a hot name and he has the reputation and the resume of all the guy does is win. Agreed? Like, doesn't matter the level. He could coach girls 12-year-old basketball. He's going to win.
Gabe calls him the Cignetti of college basketball.
Okay. If you plug that guy in at North Carolina, I've always wondered this. So like, let's use Bruce Pearl as the example. I think Bruce wins at a upper middle class job at a higher level than expected. Because I think Bruce is only taking jobs where he knows the administration's going to be in line with him and everyone's going to be pushing in the right direction. I wonder, though, if you gave Bruce the North Carolina job. I'm using hypothetically because I think he's done coaching. Does he win multiple titles? Because I used to think, just go get the best coach. Winners win. The Cignetti, if you will. But honestly, Brian Kelly has changed that thinking. Kalen DeBoer has changed that thinking. And now I'm wondering if there's something to these elite of the elite jobs where probably more than anything, I wouldn't even say CEO is the right term. You're basically like the head of state, and instead of like a two-party system, you've got like 100 different parties and factions, and you're trying to get them all to go in the same direction. Part of the reason why Saban worked at Alabama is he very quickly, like in the first year, they'll never admit this. Remember when they got after Louisiana Monroe?
Right.
Remember there was like a slightly above a slap on the wrist NCAA penalty? Like I think that Independence Bowl against like Colorado didn't count. I think he put some heads on spikes and was like, if you think that you guys are in charge here, that ain't the case. Get in line. Now, that leadership style worked for Nick Saban because they were desperate. Does that work everywhere? I don't know. Like, I have wondered if just inserting good basketball coach, like I'm sorry to the Vandy people out there. I'm not trying to get your coach moved. I use him as an example, though, of a guy in Mark Byington, another guy that has a resume of everywhere he's gone, he's won. Does that mean you give him the North Carolina job and it's like off to the races?
So I would say on a certain level, let the politics be the politics. If you get a Bruce Pearl who's used to running the show and having everybody worship the ground that he walks on and used to having influence in every corner of campus and having the chancellor and the AD and all the boosters, like, you know, just fangirl over him, right? And then all of a sudden you go to a place with that already has history, that has a lot of egos who think they know what's best for the basketball program. Like, it's going to be hard for you to be that force of that magnetic force at a place like that, as opposed to a place like Auburn or a place like Tennessee. So it's why I think John Shire has worked well at Duke. It's like, he's just a ball coach. It's why I think like Ben McCollum or a TJ Otzelberger would work well at North Carolina. They don't have to be the center of attention. The world, the basketball focus on campus doesn't have to revolve around them the way it does a Bruce Pearl or the way it does a Brian Kelly. Like, they need their egos stroked. They need to know that they're the most important people around, and they need the adoration of other people. Ben McCollum didn't care about that. He's been at Northwest Missouri State. Nobody knew who he was 2 years ago. You know, TJ Otzelberger has spent most of his career toiling in the anonymity of the upper Midwest. Like, you know, he doesn't have some huge ego. He has huge biceps. So,
he has tight shirts.
He does. We
saw Schmedium. That guy in Florida. That guy doesn't have huge biceps. That guy, that Gator fan, he had huge biceps. By the way,
he did.
That was the most like steroid guy I've ever seen in my entire life. That guy looks like he eats steroids for breakfast, literally. Like, he had the good old school, like late 90s, early 2000s steroids where everybody's neck started bulging. Like, now we've gotten these steroids.
Mark McGuire.
Yeah,
steroids.
Like the Barry Bonds, the Mark McGuire. Like, now we've gotten these steroids where these guys just look like they're just absolutely cut, like they were chiseled. Like, they got veins popping out. That guy just went straight old school. Like, you know, okay, that was needle in the butt, just the good stuff. Like, that was anabolic steroids.
Crazy thing is, he still had a full head of hair.
I know. I mean, well,
how does that work?
I'm going to bet that wasn't all natural either.
Yeah, yeah. So does the Bosley stuff, does that, you know, can that to work even when you're taking steroids? Because I mean, I was like, wow, I've never seen somebody that jacked who's not bald.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and guess that guy is doing touch-ups like pretty frequently. If you're gonna show up to the game looking like that, you are someone that is very concerned with your appearance.
Also, it's just so Florida, man. It is so Florida. Name me another SEC fan base where that guy exists and shows up to the games. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but the thing about the Gators is, God, that fan base has so much range. Because then you, like, that guy's, like, peak sidewalk Gator, if you will. And then you have, like, the highfalutin, hoity-toity, we're above it all Gator fans.
Yeah, yeah, the Florida fan base really puts the full diversity of white people
yes.
on display.
It's like good old-fashioned barbecue fest used to be. Like, the ultimate range of white people that you would, when you would go to the, when we had it down at the river and then everybody's jammed in, like, you'd see every type of white person at barbecue fest.
That Florida fan base, man, they are really something else. I saw a picture of this guy.
I guess it makes sense though when you think about it, because in general, like George and I've joked about this, is because his parents are down there. Florida in general has more range than any state I know.
You're liable to see anything. I mean, it used to be your show, right? Where y'all would do a segment on like what state did this happen in?
Yeah.
And like, half the time it was Florida. It's like, oh, you know, where did the guy in jorts like get arrested for, chasing a police officer on a moped while, you know, chugging a White Claw or something. You know, it's always Florida. It's always Florida where that stuff happens.
Because like, Florida's three different countries or three different
and
states.
You cannot,
in one.
You could probably even extrapolate. It might even be like five. Like, because the only thing that separates the panhandle from Alabama is like an imaginary line on a map. The panhandle is basically just like
South Alabama, South Georgia.
Correct.
That's all it is.
Then you get to Jacksonville, which is heavily military influenced. Like a lot of like it's kind of its own thing.
Cape Canaveral.
Then you get to like Orlando, which is like the physical embodiment of a chain restaurant. Like
that they just decided to plop into the middle of a swamp.
Like
that no one talks about either.
I want to be clear, like there are chain restaurants that I love, but like, there's no like
universal,
there's no like soul or any. And like, I know people from like Orlando, there are cool neighborhoods, but like in general, there's not an identifiable culture.
Master planning, like,
correct.
Retirement communities,
correct.
Right? Quarter acre lots,
miserable airport.
MCO is the worst.
And then when you get to Miami, it's like,
you're in North Cuba.
It's like Cuba / money laundering /
it's amazing.
Like real estate deals that you know are not on the up and up. Like that state just has tons of range, and the state university is obviously probably going to reflect that.
Yeah. Well, but Florida State, I feel like, is more classical, like Southern University, just in terms of, I don't know, you're not seeing all the jorts wearers in Tallahassee.
Ah, man, when I covered that game, when I covered the 2016 Ole Miss Florida State game.
Hey, I was at that game.
They got some range too, man.
Yeah.
Now, I think that their fan base is collectively pushing in the same direction. I feel like Florida's fan base is kind of all over the map. And FSU Twitter.
Oh, it's something.
It's obviously not like peak what it was, but I'm telling you, man, in like 2015-16, anyone that wants to talk about how toxic the internet is today, I just want to I want to show them FSU Twitter.
You know, I've always been of the opinion that like for Alabama, for example, like the only reason why their fan base was not considered as toxic or insane as like your Tennessee fan base was just because they didn't stink at all.
They were winning.
Now they do. So, I mean, every fan base is the same of that magnitude. Florida State, Alabama, whatever, your top tier ACC, Big 12, every Big 10, every SEC school, you know, for the most part, like if they stink, they're going to be similarly miserable and similarly loud and similarly insufferable.
Oh, I've just, one of my favorite things in life is watching people come to grips with reality. And, like, watching Alabama fans think that, like, they don't like college football anymore just simply because they're not winning at the level that they were. It is delicious.
Oh, I can't wait to see Will Wade come to grips with reality at LSU that, like, oh, man, the SEC that I left is a lot – it looks a lot different now. This league just got 14 teams into the NCAA tournament last year, going to be getting 10, 11 at minimum in every year henceforth. Meanwhile, you know, when I was there, it was like pre-NIL, slash very early NIL. I could cheat my tail off to get players in there who were as good or better than the players in the rest of the league. And I didn't even have to be a good coach because I could cheat with the best of them. And then what do we even do? We got to the NCAA tournament a few times. Awesome. Good luck, buddy. It's a different league now. You come in 5-6 years later. I mean, it's just a bear of a conference now. And with everything else they're investing in on that campus, I think he's going to fail. I think it's going to be a big, big failure for Will Wade.
We'll talk about it more next segment. But before we get to that, because there are a couple of thoughts that I had about the LSU of it all. But before we do that, I was also thinking in these terms. All right, I had something I wanted to bring up with you. All right, we were talking Will Wade. What was the last thing we'd mentioned right before Will Wade?
Oh,
Florida
well,
Man.
No.
Before Florida Man?
We're probably getting into the North Carolina coaching hire.
No. Here's what I want to say. Okay, because of all these, like when we're talking about the toxic points of view and whatnot, it has never been more obvious to me than this week. Holy hell, Cobb. We need the games back. And here would be my larger point. We had a pretty good setup this year post-Super Bowl because I think the winter games, even if you're not like the world's biggest one, like I think casually sports fans found the winter games at least watchable, and then there were certain things that they gravitated towards. Would you agree?
Sure.
Then we rolled basically from the Winter Olympics to like tail end of conference tournament race or conference regular season races, conference tournament season, and then it was like right into the NCAA tournament. We did not really have much of that dead window that we're used to having post Super Bowl, really up until like conference tournament weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so oftentimes what fills the void then is like mindless NFL draft debates, NBA MVP conversation. And you saw this week, I am so checked out on the whole Ty Simpson quarterback debates. And then maybe this one's a little bit more online, but there are so many people fighting about the NBA MVP right now that I'm just like, God, just give me the games again. Because for the most part, you were able to kind of, as a sports fan, you were able to kind of just not have to deal with that like incessant conversation, which I find to be grating and annoying. And I actually have now started to wonder if, you know how we used to always blame television producers for like First Take for all of those debates? I got a new culprit in mind.
Okay.
I think the agencies. I think they're the ones that are blasting out the, they're the ones that are blasting out like the, here's so-and-so's case for the MVP and then like all the reasons. And it always ends up like recruiting going negative.
You and Gabe are on the same wagon here.
We might have talked about this. And I think the same thing holds true. Like, do I really believe CAA held a meeting and said, here's the talking points, Ty Simpson is going to be the number one quarterback? No. But do I think CAA clients are fed information that make Ty Simpson look good? I do.
Yeah. That's where I'm at on it as well. Yeah.
And I'm in the same boat. Also, like, Do I really think there was a grand CAA conspiracy on game day to make Lane Kiffin look like a victim? No, but I do think CAA made sure their point of view was shared with their clients.
Man, I'm glad you found this train of thought, because like you're rolling here. Like what? Like you're rolling.
And so, I think what we've also seen in the sports media landscape now is there's more, and like it used to be once upon a time, like just because you're on television didn't necessarily mean you had an agent. And now all of these things have gotten to be so incestuous that it's kind of tough to parse out like what's legitimate from what's an angle to like the actual, like, what is this person's opinion? And like
we used to actually have like real journalists having these debates and these discussions. You know, it used to be like Mel Kiper, who, you know, whatever, you can call it maybe not the best.
This is a Mel friendly zone. The man invented the art form. Does he miss occasionally? Yeah. You know who else misses occasionally? Every GM ever.
Yeah, but we used to listen to a guy like that, or a Todd McShay, or an actual draft analyst, as opposed to glorifying and propping up,
McShay's,
you know,
guilty too.
You know, okay, sure, but like my point is, I think there's a difference between journalists and media now. Like, I think there's a huge distinction there. Pat McAfee, Dan Orlovsky, whatever, they're media, right? They're not journalists. There is no journalistic standard for them to be beholden to. Like, they didn't grow up working at a newspaper, like learning how to be unbiased. They just like did an audition, an air check, and they're like, wow, you sound great screaming into a microphone with hot takes. So like, it's just a totally different way of thinking. And now it's on us. Like, you used to be able to trust the information that you were hearing, because for the most part it was, you know, viewed as impartial or whatever. Well, now it's like you as the viewer have to be able to cut through it.
You have to be discerning. I would also actually argue a little bit too, though. Journalists have a little bit more blood on their hands than they care to admit.
No, I mean, I'm not saying they don't, but like...
No, I do. I do agree with your general point. But like, now think about it in these terms, where so many journalists now have talking platforms where, to be clear, they should. Like, I'm fine with it. But you can, when you're in like a free-flowing conversation and maybe you're talking more ideas, like you're now blending the aspect of, well, is that the journalist? Is that the opinion person? Is like, I think it's also like this universe where you kind of have to do everything all at once. Like, take Pablo Torre, for example. He's a trained journalist and a very good one. But when he's on other formats, is he? Because he seems to be editorializing a lot. And I'm not saying he doesn't have a right to do that. He does. But like, I do think that's where... Because I do agree with your overarching opinion that journalist and media member are not the same thing. I would also argue, though, that's kind of been the case for a while. But there's also this reality, though, of... What's the difference between media member and columnist?
Not a huge one. I mean, the Pat McAfee, right, or whoever your screaming talking head is on TV, like that's basically what a columnist was at a newspaper when newspapers were still a thing and still had columnists. You know, because think about it. Like, if you had 5 years ago, if you had Munns on to talk about the Tigers, and then you had Giannotto on to talk about the Tigers, like Giannotto's going to be able, he's going to be a little more free to like just give you his take, give you his opinion on the whole matter, right? Whereas like Munns, like he's a beat writer, so like he's going to be a little bit more fact-based. Hey, here's what
he's got to cover the program
the
every day too.
To, and right, you know what I'm saying? So like there is a difference there, but now like we retweet and regurgitate and freak out over what the talking heads say, and we prioritize them over, you know, the more fact-based, analysis-based, like reporting-based content. And like, I don't think that's made us better as a society.
No, and I think also, like, I think one of the big issues with social media is every opinion essentially gets treated the same. So, for instance, Elon Musk can have a thought, and I can have a thought, and other than the size of his audience, it's kind of like treated as a similar gravitas viewpoint, and there's no one that's less important than I am and the richest man in the world. Like you see what I'm saying? Like, whereas
you're more important to me than Elon Musk is.
Well, not if he puts like, I don't know, $500 million into downtown. Like, then all of a sudden, like, I am for sale. I am all for sale for my hometown. But like, I was thinking about this last night because Ryan Glasspiegel, my buddy, him and Marshawn were talking about it was something along the lines of like the bad content that's unavoidable on television. And Glasspiegel made the point, he's like, 20 years ago, he's like, we had Cops, we had the Jerry Springer Show, we had Maury.
I still like Cops. Don't you? You don't like Cops?
I think the heyday of Cops is like 98. Remember when they tried to bring it back? I don't know.
I miss Cops and America's Most Wanted. Those were great Saturday nights as a kid.
My point, though, was those shows, the people that were getting arrested on Cops, when we put the camera in the face of them and they said something, we were not going, you know, the guy's got a great point. Like, the people that are on Jerry Springer, we're sitting there, it's the circus. We're laughing at them. Like, but now the only thing that matters is engagement. And for better, and it, some people are great at engagement and they're doing it in good faith. But there's a lot of people that do engagement in bad faith simply yep. because that elevates everything. And to me, like, that's a huge problem. But I don't know how you, like, rage baiting has existed forever.
Right.
And it's just you haven't been able to really monetize.
You can make an entire career out of it much more easily than you could before.
Correct. Because now someone doesn't have to hire you. You can start your own thing and make millions. All right, let's get into the LSU of it all. Will Wade heading back to LSU. Cobb has offered up some skepticism. There's a couple other questions that I have about it. We'll talk about it next, right here on Jeff Rett and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb. So it turns out that it was not a leverage play. I was laughing at it yesterday. Did you happen to check out who Will Wade followed on Tuesday night?
Was it Libby Dunn?
No, he was like following every LSU account known to man.
Except Kim Mulkey.
Did not follow Kim Mulkey, but he did follow LSU women's basketball. Is Kim on the Everything app?
I have no idea. I just thought.
God, if she gave unfiltered takes on the app, oh
that
my
would
God.
Be...
You want to talk about somebody who could light the world on fire.
That campus, Mulkey, Kiffin, now Will Wade. In 5 years, the demise and the blow up of that athletic department is going to be unbelievable. HBO needs to send cameras there now to document the entire thing, because there's no way it doesn't end in a total disaster.
I am incorrect. Kim Mulkey is on X, the Everything app.
Does she fire off takes? I'm betting no.
It's more of the like, oh, thank you to this person for helping out the team, reposting stuff.
I'm betting Kim's agent
probably runs
doesn't
it.
Want Kim having unfiltered access. That's just a thought.
There's a little video of Kim Mulkey.
That feels more brand management than it does.
That's exactly
the opportunity to share your thoughts. So it is official now that Will Wade, he has posted a statement to the Everything app, wanting to sincerely take a moment to thank North Carolina State Athletic Director Boo Corrigan, still one of the best names of all time. We have a Boo and a Bubba in the RDU, right?
Oh gosh.
Well, I guess Bubba's only for the rest of the year, right? Isn't he retiring?
Yeah, he's on his way out. Yeah.
Okay, but we have a Boo and a Bubba. He is leaving. He is heading back to LSU. LSU will now pay an $8 million buyout to Matt McMahon on top of their $56 million. What did Kelly get?
A lot. They just got done paying Ed Ogeron.
Okay, here's the question that I have for LSU. Will Wade is not taking this job unless he thought LSU showed their work and was going to be committed to the NIL space. Would you agree with that?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, Norlander has it at like, oh, he's going to get 10 at LSU, whereas NC State was at 9 this past year. And I'm like, all right, NC State was at 9 this past year. Surely we're going up from there after you make the NCAA tournament. So, like, you're telling me 10, 11 at LSU is like, oh, wow. Like, oh, man, what a difference maker. I don't know. Like, it's, I mean, clearly he just wanted to go back to LSU. Like,
I think that's fair. He wants to go back and work for the guys that he worked for at McNeese. And that's a part of it. But this is the question that I have. When we've been discussing schools having to make choices about trying to win at everything, I understand LSU is not a poverty organization, but they are trying to win at the highest level in football. Now, men's basketball, women's basketball,
baseball.
Baseball, they're competitive more so in softball as well, not more so than baseball.
Like gymnastics.
I just don't know how much money does it take in gymnastics.
I mean, I feel like it's a big deal now. I don't know what the NIL is on a gymnast.
Now, I'm sure
is the vaulter, like, do you pay more for the vaulter as opposed to the beam specialist? Like, what's that?
I don't know. Does a floor exercise?
I feel like gymnastics, it's less, when it comes to actual cost, less about the athlete, more about the equipment and maintenance and all that.
Well, I'm sure also being
not cheap.
Keeping that pommel horse greased up is, well, I guess that's men only, but yeah.
I would also figure
need a lot of chalk.
Being at one of the big schools probably matters more in gymnastics than it does strictly rev share, because if you're getting the big profile, a lot of those girls are massive on social media.
Yeah, you get your own endorsement money.
Right, like that's how Livy Dunn became Livy Dunn.
Right, right. But your point is right, exactly right. Like when Will Wade was at LSU before, there wasn't the institutional tug of war for resources like there is now. I mean, yeah, it was like, we want a new practice facility, or we want a new strength facility, or whatever the case may be. But now it's like you're literally
fighting. Our locker room does not have a water slide.
Yeah, like you can't cheat to get ahead anymore. You can't. Like you can't cheat to get ahead in college basketball anymore. That's how Will Wade made his career, by cheating to get ahead. And now he's going, you know, to a place where, I mean, he's the fourth most important sport on his own campus. And he's the, I'm sorry, this LSU basketball job is one of the worst in the conference. Like, woo, $10 million. Like, good luck going and winning the SEC with $10 million. Like, I've never been of the opinion that Will Wade is like a great basketball coach. I just think he was a great player getter. And the way that you get players is different now. You know, great. Like, you did awesome at McNeese when you got a bunch of, you know, like, he had investment there. Like, he had way more money than the rest of the Southland Conference.
Definitely had more money than the rest of the Southland Conference. I think they had an operation in place. I don't know, because I go back and forth on Will Wade. At a certain degree, I find him a little bit more palatable than Nate Oates, simply because Will is at least intellectually honest. Like, Nate does, like, the move where, like, you know, I'm doing all the scummy stuff, but catch me at Mass. Like,
yeah, right, right. I'm doing it for the kids. You
yeah,
know, I'm
like,
stick up
no,
the
you're not. You're doing it for you. That doesn't mean that they can't benefit too. But, like, stop acting like this is some higher calling.
Yeah, right.
Like, at least with Will. Like, yeah, I said that.
Yeah, like, he's a slime ball and he knows it.
Yeah, he just kind of owns it.
Yeah. And if he wins enough, people will be okay with it. But I just see the ceiling in this era for Will Wade. Look, he's good to infuse you with a quick jolt of energy and excitement and get the thing turned around. I mean, shoot, he just did that at NC State. They stunk down the stretch, but, like, they were far more competent this year than they were the year before. And, you know, I mean, he gives you a jolt of energy. I mean, he's never been anywhere more than 5 years. Like, that's the thing. It's like, over the long haul, I don't know that he's the guy that's going to lead you to glory. But, I mean, I guess at this point, LSU basketball is just like, hey, we want to run it back. We want to at least be somewhat relevant. I think he can accomplish that. But, I don't know, man, I'm just...
I was trying just, to... I was thinking about this also with Will. What were the, do you remember last year's cycle?
Yeah, why couldn't he have gone to LSU last year?
Well, I was thinking about this. So Will went to NC State kind of like early in the process. And then remember late we had like A&M open. Weren't there like a couple of other, like a couple of jobs that happened after the initial, what we thought was the carousel? Because obviously you had Buzz going, you had Buzz going to Maryland after Willard went to Nova. But I felt like there were like a, there was like an A&M, like A&M adjacent jobs. And I always wondered if Will, who seemed, for obvious reasons, hellbent on getting out of McNeese and getting back into the power, or excuse me, what do we have to call it, major conference?
Right, high major structure.
High major structure, bigger, I forgot the high. Was there a little buyer's remorse that, like, he bid on NC State earlier? Because I think he could have gotten maybe one of those other gigs, but it seemed like he was wanting to get out bad enough that he didn't want to risk missing he wanted, the floor was NC State and he wasn't going to risk not getting that, because NC State at a certain point probably would have had to move on.
He telegraphed it. I mean, everybody knew when they won that first round game over Clemson last year that he was gone. I mean, it was obvious at that point he was going to NC State. He all but said it, and it seemed like a perfect fit because he was a, I mean, he went to school at Clemson. He was a manager at Clemson. So he was kind of born and raised to a certain extent in the ACC. And I still think winning in the ACC is easier than winning in the SEC. Now, I get it. You're next door neighbors with Duke and North Carolina. Like, I understand that. But it, when you look at the conference as a whole, like, it's going to be a lot easier to beat up on the have-nots of the ACC than it is in the SEC. You are one of the have-nots in basketball at LSU. So it's like, where are you getting those easy wins and that, you know, free pass to 20 victories every year like you do in the ACC? As far as I know, like, Boston College is still in the ACC, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Syracuse going nowhere fast. Like, I mean, but you, that's the caliber of school that you are at LSU. So,
well,
I mean,
to your point, who is not trying in the SEC in basketball? That doesn't mean that, like, there aren't teams that were bad this year. Like, Ole Miss and Mississippi State were trying to win this year. They did not have good years, but they were trying. It's like South Carolina and then...
Yeah, they're the LSU.
And LSU. And so now if LSU's trying... Like, to your point, though, the difference between, like, using Ole Miss and Mississippi State... Let's see. Like, let's use Mississippi State as an example. All right. So they finish at 13 and 19. They had overtime loss to SMU, a 3-point loss to San Francisco, a 1-point loss to Ole Miss, a 5-point loss to Missouri that I think they kind of blew it down the stretch on the road. Wasn't there an Auburn? No, they ended up beating Auburn. A 6-point loss to Georgia. Like, there's about 5 games that you could flip, and all of a sudden Mississippi State, who looks like one of the worst teams in the league, well, that's kind of a bubble team. Does that make them a great team? No, but it's a bubble team.
Yeah, the floor of the SEC way, way better than the floor of the ACC. And, I mean, you just think about it. Okay, sure, being next to Duke and UNC is tough,